Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
I sometimes run out of witty things to say.
You don't have to say anything witty. Nobody expects wit from you.
Oh, you're a jerk.
Hey, I'm just telling the truth, man.
It's true. Sadly.
Yeah, don't take it so personally. I mean, it's just who you are. Just who you are.
I dislike you very much.
Yeah, well.
So, hey, how about enough of the insults? Let's talk about what you've been playing.
Insults are so much fun. What have I been playing? I've had another dry spell with my board game playing, and I've been, all of my free time has been spent on my PlayStation 3, and I've been playing a game called Tokyo Jungle, which I would like to tell everybody about because it is freaking awesome. It's an excellent game. It's a downloadable on PlayStation Network. It's only like $15, so it's cheap. It's easy to get into. The premise of the game is that humans have left the Earth, and they have left the animals to fend for themselves. And so you play as various animals in the ruins of Tokyo, and you are trying to survive. And it would be classified as a roguelike game. I don't know if that means anything to you.
Nothing.
Okay, I didn't think so. It's a video game term. A roguelike, it's a reference to an old role-playing game called Rogue. But the idea is that it's a game where you can't save your game. You start playing, and you play until you die. And then when you die, you go back to the beginning, and you start all over again. And it features a lot of random elements, a lot of random environmental stuff, random enemies, random equipment, random drops, random everything, okay? In a true roguelike game, not only is all the stuff and the actions, the enemies random, but also the environment in which the dungeon you're running around in is also then randomly generated. This is not randomly generated. This is a preset map. So that's kind of what sets it apart from roguelike. But okay, all that said, of course, these games, they also though, they feature a situation there where you very often have some kind of persistent equipment that you can carry over with you, okay, to the next time you start over.
You get to choose to keep some of that equipment.
You might get to keep some of that equipment, or maybe your character starts with better stats the next time. They're a little stronger, a little faster, and that kind of thing, okay?
Now, can you choose which animal you play?
Well, that's a big part of the game, is that when you start out the game, you have two animals that you can play with, and you start in this survival mode, okay? And you can play first either as a Pomeranian dog or as a deer, okay? Pomeranian, obviously, is a carnivore. The deer is an herbivore, okay? And the two play, I mean, the controls and things are all the same, and all the features of the game are the same, but carnivores, in order to eat, they have to kill something, right?
Right.
But the herbivores, the only way they're going to eat is by finding plants growing in the environment. Okay.
Which in an abandoned city seems pretty easy.
Well, that's the thing. And those things are randomized. You know, how much food is available in any given section of the city of Tokyo, it changes every time. You know,
okay.
In fact, every time the sun goes down and a new day starts, also that the food quantity of food in each section changes randomly. Okay.
Oh.
And as you're playing, you know, each time you're playing in survival mode with one animal, you have a certain number of challenges that you can unlock. And I don't know if it's 25 or 30 challenges, but if you complete all those challenges, then you get a whole bunch of bonus points. Along the way with each one of those animals, one of those challenges is going to be to beat a boss in that level. Okay. So when you're playing as the Pomeranian, for example, you have to seek out and kill the cat boss. And then if you defeat the cat boss, then when you're back to your game starts screen, you can then play as the cat. And then you can play through the game again, play as the cat. And if you do the cat successfully, and then at some point you can find the beagle boss. And once you kill the beagle boss, now the beagle is available for play.
Okay.
Right. So a major part of the game is that you're trying to unlock all these different animals and play through the game is all these new things. There's also you're unlocking story mode stuff, so you can play a story mode, collect a, you know, like journal entries and stuff, so you can read the story of what happened to Tokyo, what happened to the world, why did all the humans leave, why are these animals running loose and wild, why are there dinosaurs back in the world, and it's just crazy. I mean there's cats and dogs of every different type. Sorry, my phone just pinged at me.
Can you play as a dinosaur?
You can. Yes, you can play as a dinosaur. In fact, I think there's four or five different kinds of dinosaurs you can play as. But you might be playing as a dinosaur. You could play as a bear or a zebra or a giraffe or an alligator, okay? I mean, you can play as a hippo, dude. It's
yes.
Ridiculous. This game is freaking ridiculous.
I bet if you play as a hippo, you have to eat a lot.
I imagine. I don't know.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because you'd be hungry, hungry.
I knew that you were going to do that, and I let you go. Yeah, it's great. It's super fun, and like the first three or four times you try and play that survival mode, you will want to pull your hair out because it's so hard. It's so hard, but at some point it's going to click for you, and you're gonna kind of start to understand the flow of the game, and it's great. And all of the mechanics in the game, there's kind of like a defensive move and an attack move, and you can hide in tall grass and stuff. Everything fits, all the mechanics fit together really, really well to kind of serve that one idea of the basic concept of you are animals trying to survive in this hostile environment. And it's shockingly compelling.
Wow.
Yeah, it completely caught me off guard. I mean, I watched a video of it online, and there's a scene that this guy's running around and he's playing as a deer, and he goes up to a pack of little baby chicks.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, let me see what happens. And so as the deer, he kicks one of the chicks and kills it. And the other four chicks freak out and they start chasing him down to peck at him and kill him. And so he runs, is this deer, he runs into this patch of tall grass and he hides, and he crouches down and he hides. And these chicks, they run to where the last saw you enter the grass, and then they fan out in like a pattern and start looking around for him. And they're like, where'd he go? What's going on? Where'd he go? He's hiding. We lost him. You know, it's crazy, wow. Ridiculous and silly to just like watch it one time. It's really, really silly. But when you start playing, that's why I bought it, because I thought, man, this looks ridiculous and crazy.
Right.
But once you get into the game, you're like, wow, this is a real thing. This is a real compelling strategy, action, survival kind of thing here that's really good.
That sounds awesome. I kind of want to play the game.
It's
great. Is it PlayStation only?
PlayStation 3, yeah. Yeah, PlayStation Network. It's downloadable. It's great. And there's downloadable content, so you can download additional, I don't want to say monsters, creatures, animals, you know.
Right.
And I'm sure there's going to be more coming in the future.
So what's the type of thing, like, you get equipment and stuff? What kind of equipment does a deer get?
Well, that's kind of one of the funny things is you get loot drops, right?
Right.
And it's like different kinds of clothing to put on your animal. Okay, so far, for example, I've unlocked little heart-shaped glasses and Groucho Marx glasses. I've got a baseball cap. I've got a bandana around the neck. I've got like a little dog jacket. They call it a pink camisole, but it's a little pink dress to put on your animal. I've got shoes that look like cat paws that give you a bonus. And each of these things give you some kind of a bonus. Whoops, I just bumped the mic there. Each of these things give you some kind of a bonus, either to attack or defense, or give you more life. There's a hunger meter in the game. You have to eat so often, and if you don't eat often enough, your hunger drops down and you start losing life. You know, so some stuff will give you a bonus to your hunger stats, so you can go longer without eating, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
A big part of the game also then is, of course, you know, your animal can only live for 15 years. So at some point you have to mark your territory and claim a section as your own, find a mate, and then mate and reproduce into the next generation. And really that reproduction to the new generations, every time you do that, your permanent base stats increase. So then if you die, the next time you come in to play as that Pomeranian again, your Pomeranian this time that you start with is going to be a little bit better than the last time, and then a little bit better than the last time. So every time you mate and you advance a generation, then your starting out creature, your starting out animal is going to be doing a little bit better than you did last time.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's great. All that carries over. So like I said, it's a seemingly very simple, very silly game, but there's a lot of complexity and there's a lot of depth in there that I'm just bonkers for. I'm loving it to death.
That sounds super duper awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited about
it. So anybody out there has a PlayStation 3, again, $15, it's downloadable. You can't beat that. You get so much game for that $15. It's great.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, what have you been playing?
I've been playing this game called Mind Trap.
You know, I think I've seen that before on a shelf, but I've never played it.
So it's been a long time since I played. It's one of these games that I don't really like the game, but I keep it around, and every once in a while I pull the game out and we try and play it, and my wife gets really mad and I get really mad. And so it's a game, it's not a trivia game, but you're on a board and you're trying to get around the board, and the way to get around the board is to answer questions. But it's like a deduction game, right? Like, so
I like deduction
trivia
games.
Deduction question, like a scenario, and you have to solve something. So I thought the best way to give a flavor of this game was actually just read a couple of the cards.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to read you one that I solved. I got this one right.
Okay.
And I think it's pretty not complex. So I'm going to read that. And that's, and then I'm going to read you one that you aren't going to solve.
Okay.
There's no way. If you did,
you're
just not going to. And it kind of shows that the game can be really cool because you're like, oh, yeah, I figured that out because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Or the game could make you just want to punch stuff because it's just so dumb.
Okay.
So.
All right.
First one. A black dog stands in the middle of an intersection in a town painted black. None of the streetlights are working due to a power failure caused by an electrical storm. A car with two broken headlights drives towards the dog, but turns in time to avoid hitting him. How could the driver have seen the dog?
The moon's out.
False.
What?
You want to know the answer? Or you got any other
guesses? Well, wait, okay.
You want me to give you a hint? Or are you going to figure it out yourself?
All right, so black dog, black, the whole town is black.
Right.
Okay. The car is black.
Yep.
No headlights.
Right.
No street lights.
Right.
The car is driving up the dog, and the car still managed to swerve and miss the dog.
Yep.
It's not that the dog ran out of the way.
Nope.
The dog is standing in the middle of the intersection.
Yes.
The car is driving in the lane and drove right past the dog because the dog's not in the lane. He's in the middle of the intersection.
So you're overthinking it. That's what's funny about it. So I'm pretty decent at questions like this.
Okay.
So like to me, what you do is 90% of the information here is useless. You don't need it, right?
Uh-huh.
There's one piece of information in here that actually matters.
Okay.
And what helped me solve it, which was this. None of the streetlights are working due to a power failure caused by a local storm. None of the streetlights are working due to a power failure.
Okay.
What does it not tell you there? It doesn't say none of the streetlights are on because of the storm. It says none of them are working.
None of them are working. Is it just... So
that made me think, well, would they be on if they were working? Because this just says... It doesn't say that they're not on because they're not working. It just says they're not working.
Well,
so...
Okay.
So that made me think, why would they have been on? What if...
It's the middle of the day?
It's the middle of the day! Because it never says it's nighttime. You just make that assumption because they're like black, 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 black. Right? So I got that one right when I played the game. And I felt pretty good about myself, right? And then...
I tell you, my suggestion of the fact that the moon is out is perfectly valid.
If it was a full moon. I mean, I will give you that there are some on here where I'm like, I can think of another valid reason, but you can only get what's on the card.
Yeah.
But now let me read you one that's just going to make you shake your head.
All right. Okay?
And then we'll move on.
Go ahead.
And these have like characters in them, right? And Shadow is the detective.
Shadow. Detective Shadow.
Shadow flipped the tent flap open and surveyed the scene. On the floor in the center of the tent.
Detective Shadow.
A man lay dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
He's dead, Detective Shadow.
In the corner of the tent was a small cot.
Detective Shadow.
A pack of cigarettes and an empty whiskey bottle lay beside the bed next to a kerosene lamp.
Detective Shadow, don't smoke. It's bad for you.
Shadow combed the tent for additional clues to the possible motive. Other than the articles mentioned, the only things Shadow found were a half dozen small circular wooden discs under the cot, the man's personal effects, a variety of scrapbooks and news clippings. Shadow found the last articles particularly strange since it was learned that the suicide victim was completely illiterate.
Dun, dun, dun.
What was the reason for the apparent suicide?
And does it give the answer on that side right there?
No, you're looking at the other question. I have it says.
Well,
yeah, answer's on the other side.
Okay, can I look at the card? I promise I won't turn it over.
I mean, you can, but there's no reason to. Go ahead.
All right. Okay, so my clues are, okay, so it's a tent. Okay, it's a tent. On the floor in the center of the tent, a man lay dead from self-inflicted gunshots. So a guy shot himself in the head, apparently.
Apparently.
In the corner of the tent is a small cot. A package of cigarettes and an empty whiskey bottle lay on the bedside table next to a kerosene lamp. Okay, so there's a cot. There's a bedside table with a lamp, cigarettes, and an empty bottle. Okay. He combed the tent. The only other things he found were half a dozen, so six small wooden discs under the cot. The man's personal effects, which apparently are irrelevant, other than that they're
they actually are relevant, but they don't tell you what they are.
They don't tell you what they, so they're relevant, but it doesn't. Not relevant enough to tell us what the specific things
they
are.
They gave you a hint as to what one of them was.
A pack of cigarettes.
Completely matters.
Okay.
But.
And a variety of scrapbooks and news clippings. Shadow found the last article is particularly strange, as it was learned the suicide victim was completely illiterate. What was the reason for the apparent suicide? So, see, this is way too open-ended for me.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think the other card is valid. Like, that first one, I figured that out. I mean, okay. I got it. And there are several others in here that I figured out. And I'm not super great at this, but I mean, it's a story problem, right? It's a story problem without math. And the good news for me is I'm good at story problems, I'm bad at math.
Yeah.
So, let me read this to you, because...
Well, wait, let me think about this more for a minute.
You're not going to get it, though.
But I just want to try and logic it out here. Okay, so the guy shot himself. There's all this crap lying around. Okay, so he's got newspaper clippings, scrapbooks sitting there, and his personal effects. Okay, are all of these things his personal effects?
I would assume, I don't know the specific definition of personal effects. I think things they would take from you when you went to prison, they would put them in a baggie and give them back, perhaps.
Okay. So, but I mean, God, that's so broad.
Listeners, here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
The answer is so ridiculous, Rob is not going to get it, but he's going to waste your time.
All right, fine. You've made your point. What is the answer so that okay. I can go, ugh.
The man was a partial cripple who worked for a circus. He was known as the world's shortest living adult. Someone was cutting short pieces from the end of his walking cane. Those are the discs. Consequently, he thought he was starting to grow and would eventually lose his notoriety and also his job. That is the most ridiculous thing ever. I would challenge that Sherlock Holmes himself could not figure that out. Now, the difference is Shadow knew what the newspaper clippings were and probably knew there was a walking cane there.
Yeah. That is so terrible. That's dumb.
So, I don't know.
That's dumb.
Great. So, I don't know, like, I mean, is the game purposely just trying to be a jerk there? Is, like, the writers are like, this is hilarious. Because no one would get that. I've read that card to a dozen people.
No.
And, I mean, there's no way.
What that makes me think of is when I was a kid and we were in Boy Scouts, okay, we played a game around the campfire that we would do. It was a storytelling game, right? And somebody would give you a scenario, give you a setup for that scenario. And you know, they would like give you that situation, okay? For example, hey, this is the detective walks into this and this is all the stuff that he sees, okay? And then rather than the kids around the table just around the campfire have to just come up with that answer on the spot, what they would do is they would ask the leader a series of yes or no questions, okay? And so they would say, what are his personal effects? And he'd say, well, I can't tell you what. You have to ask a yes or no question. So, okay, is there a toothbrush in there? And he would say yes or no, or that doesn't matter. That's irrelevant, okay? And they eventually might get around to these newspaper clippings. Are they recent or are they old? Oh, they're fairly recent, okay? What are they recent? Yes. Okay. Are they about politics? No. Are they about entertainment? Yes.
Are they about the world's shortest man?
Are they about a circus? Yes. Okay. You know, so you would get through these. That was how the game. You know, it's trying to tell a story and everybody figuring out the story. You know, and so the leader would give you the setup and he would know the answer. But the fun is everybody working together and trying to brainstorm and come to the story here.
That sounds like more fun than this game.
Way more. And what was great is little kids. We loved that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those stories I still remember to this day, and I just love them. I think they're great little setups. So to my mind, that's a valid way of approaching that kind of thing, that kind of a storytelling game. That on a card to get points for playing a game, that's garbage.
Yes, I agree. But every once in a while, I still pull the game out. A lot of times, I won't even play it. I'll just read the questions.
Yeah, I think I probably would too.
To see which ones I can figure out, and then I feel good about myself.
Is it just, you know, you read a thing, if the guy gets it, he gets a point, and play it at 5 points or 10 points or something?
I think so, yeah. So okay. It's been a while. I mean, recently we were just not playing. We were just reading questions back and forth. So. Okay. Well, because, again, that's the value of the game.
Yeah. All right, well, that's interesting.
So I think it's time for...
It's time for what?
The mechanic of the week!
Whoa!
Still fascinated by the new mics, not going to lie.
No, they're great. They're fun.
So, Rob, it's your turn.
It is my turn.
A mechanic.
It is. I would like to talk this evening about route or network building, okay? And this is something that I have only experienced while playing Ticket to Ride, okay? And that's route building, where you're connecting point A to point B. Okay, there might be, and when you're playing Ticket to Ride, you know, you have, I don't know if you've seen the board or played it at all, but you...
I'm familiar.
Yeah, okay. So you have a map, and, you know, we have Europe, but there's, I don't know, 7 or 8 different versions, different maps, and each map has a series of city locations where they're, I guess, train stations or hubs, and then there are lines across the board where you can place your little train cars to build routes, build connections from point A to point B. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to connect between different cities to get points for completing those goals, right?
Right.
And so the game is all about getting the right kinds of cards to give you permission to place your train cars to complete those sections of train track. And then also trying to get from point A to point B in the most efficient way possible before somebody else cuts you off.
Okay.
I really, really like that a lot. We like Ticket to Ride a lot. We've really fallen in love with it. It's better with more people. We've played it with 2, and it's good, but 4 or 6 is absolutely the best way to play.
Cool.
I haven't played any other games like that out there. I know that those games exist. And like I said, this is the route builder idea, right. But I think it's more commonly called network building.
Right. The first game that comes to mind, super simple, is Settlers of Catan.
Yeah.
So you build roads so that you can build settlements so that you can get resources.
Okay.
Another game that comes to mind is a game I can't remember that I thought of while you were talking but then forgot. Okay. Settlers is a good example of it. Well, just there's the standard Rails games, like Euro Rails and stuff like that.
And right, and I haven't played those.
I mean, those, you're like drawing with crayons on board something
like that, yeah. I don't know how different or how similar that is.
We have some friends who are really into Rails games, but we've never played them.
Right.
I think that mechanic works really well for like an exploration game.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exploration game. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Not exploitation game.
Yeah, no, exploration. I'm not sure what you mean.
So you've got a game where you've got, you have to go onto a map, right?
Uh-huh.
And you have to find new things. You're a cartographer, mm-hmm. and your goal is to map this stuff. But to do that, you have to get routes to get places, right? So you build routes.
Okay.
Cartographer is probably a bad example because, I kind of like the idea of making a game about cartographers, but... Yeah. So, say you're exploring America, right? A new land, right? You are Lewis and frickin' Clark.
Yep.
And your plan is that you need to build routes, right, to get to places. So, like, you send a scout ahead, mm-hmm. and he builds, like, a route, right? Or he maps a path for you.
Okay.
And then you can follow that. And as you join those, it allows you to take shortcuts and such.
Yeah.
Right? I can see it work for a game like that.
Yeah. All right. I wish I knew more about that crayon rail idea,
right.
Because that's interesting to me. Because that sounds simple. The Ticket to Ride. One of the nice things about it is that you have all these little plastic train cars that you can put down to build this route, and they're rectangular and they're long and thin, and they lend themselves well to that shape of that train car lends itself very well to connecting those dots. But, you know, downside is that you need these custom-made little pieces, plastic pieces. You need a whole lot of them. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been trying to think of ways to do that ourselves, ways, you know, it's the kind of thing that we could produce ourselves, thinking in terms of a self-publisher, you know.
Okay.
You know, and trying to think of other components you could use to do that. I mean, I guess maybe you could get little wooden rectangle pieces.
That's what Catan uses.
Yeah, okay. Okay. So
one covers, if you have a hex, you have like your hexes.
Yeah.
One is long enough to cover one side of a hex.
Oh, okay.
So you're okay. Getting a little more bang for your buck than what you would with the dots.
Yeah, right.
At least based on the way I imagine them, you would.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
could also use cards for it too.
Yeah, lay them down end to end. It'd be hard to make turns and corners and things.
It might be a little clunky.
Yeah.
Network building game.
Mm-hmm.
Like a plumbing game would work too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you were trying to, like, I think of that old, remember that old game where the slime was flowing?
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to build the...
it has an old Nintendo game, right?
Yeah, and you're trying to, like, build the pipes out before it gets to...
There's Pipe Dream.
Pipe Dream, that was it. Pipe Dream,
NES, yeah.
Yep. So there's another example of a different way to apply it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's a game called Trade Winds.
Okay.
I want to say that it's semi-route building, but I could be wrong about that. I think the point is you're, like, claiming trade routes.
Uh-huh, okay.
Again, I could be wrong, but that sounds familiar.
Okay. There was one back before Gen Con. There's one I wanted to try out, Swing and Jive Cat Voodoo Lounge. That used a network building mechanic that I'd never even heard of it, and I didn't make that connection between it and route building, and I didn't know what that meant at the time, and I didn't get a chance to play that. So
I'm curious with that, you know. That makes me think of a different way to do network building.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious with that, if it's more of a network as in a people network.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought.
And that's kind of cool.
Right.
Like, that could be the same type of thing. Like, you need to get from, you've got your guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have one asset that you have.
Okay.
And you need to get to the opposite end of this thing. Like, maybe you need to, you're trying to pick up chicks.
Oh, yeah. Right? All right. Let's go with this.
So,
okay.
Like, I mean, why not? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm a dude and I see a girl and I want to meet her. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to use other cards with other people on them
mm-hmm.
to network to her. Right.
Okay. Because you got to get the introduction. That's the idea.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe I've got my one guy who I'm going to friend on. I got a friend on Facebook and he knows somebody who's friends with her. So now I'm going to go friend him and then use him to get to her,
mm-hmm.
To get to this next girl. Who maybe then is going to get me to another person, and then eventually is going to get me to the girl.
Okay.
So, and that's probably not the most marketable idea.
it's like an old school 80s dating game, but like with modern mechanics.
Right.
Yeah.
There might be I mean, obviously there's some different skins you could put on that.
Sure.
You
know, that's not a bad idea though. So you know, so you have a deck of cards, and I'm sure there are other cards in there, but, you might have that there are, you know, character cards in there with a face and on the, you know, name, right? But it's not just one of each of those cards. There might be four Steves and four Eddies and three Susans. And so I might connect a Steve to an Eddie, and you might connect Eddie to Susan on yours. So we might both have an Eddie. And so by connecting Eddie to Susan, I have an Eddie, you have an Eddie. That means Steve can get introduced to Susan.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So you're building your own network, but you also then can ape because you have the same friends in both your networks, so you might be able to ape your buddy's network to make that connection.
I love that.
That
so then you think about the strategy of like,
yeah,
do I want to play this guy? Because what if he has this guy? Then he can. No, yeah. I mean, there has to be another skin. The dating thing is not a good skin.
It's funny. Well, if you're not doing it as in dating, you're doing it as picking up chicks.
You know, yeah, but
I mean, still
you
dating,
just lost
50%
of your market.
It's true,
right there with chicks.
Yeah, okay. Well, what house could we
risk
in that?
I mean, nice ladies. Hey, I don't think we've gotten. Oh, that's not true. Oh, I'm such a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
We have gotten feedback from one female listener.
Yeah, you're a super jerk.
Who I've met in person.
In person.
Which makes me a super jerk.
Super jerk.
But
super
other than
jerk.
That.
Yeah.
So I think we should really get more listener feedback from girls. What's up, girls?
I know. Come on. You know what? I've got a well, let me find her. I've got a girl on Twitter who's tweeted at me a few times.
You know what? That's true. I do. There are some.
Find her in my history here.
Obviously, the first person we're talking about,
Emily. Emily. Yeah. Hi, Emily. Thank you for listening to the show.
There's also someone follows me. Someone else. I think her Twitter handle is Munchkin Queen.
Maybe.
I think she follows the show and follows me, which makes me think she listens to the show.
Yeah.
If you're out there, we'd like to hear from you. And obviously the first girl I mentioned was Tangerine.
Yeah, right.
Who's a friend of the show.
Right.
So well, it is nice to it would be nice to hear from more female gamers.
Yeah.
Just to hear their perspective on some of our game ideas.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, I certainly want to make inclusive games that everyone wants to play, that are accessible.
Of course.
I don't want to make a game about a bunch of stinky dudes doing stuff.
Unless that's the whole theme of the game, then it might be funny.
Right.
But no, anyway, well, let's get back to that. How could we reskin that game? Because I think that's a neat idea.
I like it.
Yeah, how could that be reskinned? I mean, what kind of a theme could fit onto that?
Well, I mean, you could put like a criminal theme on it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could be forging like a criminal network.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, what might be fun about that is, I like this, right?
Kay.
So say it's a mob game, right?
Yeah.
Or like a mob underworld game.
Okay.
And then some of the characters could be like undercover police officers, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So then when I'm working my chain and you've got Eddie, right? And Eddie's at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And then I introduce Eddie to the undercover police officer.
Yeah.
And now Eddie is invulnerable. Now Eddie is less valuable to you, right?
Yeah.
Because you were putting Eddie at like a high ranking position. And now he's a turncoat or he's a mole or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I think that would be a fun skin. I mean, it's kind of.
As a one-on-one, one guy's playing the mob, one guy's playing as the cops, maybe. And you're trying to. Yeah, see, because you'd have to start out with by drawing like a crime card and a perpetrator card, okay? And so, and you as the cop, you're trying to make connect a line of people from
the crime to the perpetrator.
Yeah, right. Right, and you have to get informants along the way, and you're trying to connect those networks to, yeah.
And the other player is trying to sabotage you from
right,
doing
put
that.
People in the way, slow you down, because you got to get to that connection within a certain amount of time or something.
Ooh, and the mob guy might be able to, like, whack people?
I mean, totally, he would have to whack
guys. So, like, you're guys. Like, oh, I'm about to make connections, like, Eddie, you're gone!
Yeah.
And the only person he couldn't whack...
And he sleeps with the fishes.
The only person he couldn't whack would be the perpetrator.
Yeah.
That person would be safe.
He would, yeah, right.
But that person's card, then, I would think if you played that person's card... If you ever drew that again, you would discard it? Or no, you're saying the perpetrator would be like six or seven perpetrators. They'd be their own little stack of cards.
No, I think you'd probably have two of each guy in there, right?
Right.
Because the, your perp card would have to and your crime card would have to be set aside, right?
Right.
Okay.
But I think you have to reveal those face up. Because it's more fun if you're making the chain while the other person can see
it. Right, but then you have another perp card in your thing, and that perp card is only going to end up in the mob's hand or in the cop's hand, okay? And either way, somebody's going to connect those dots.
Right, because eventually, like, the mob guy's going to have to play it.
Right, right.
So it depends on how he plays it, because the way he plays it could distract you.
And if the cop gets it out there, the cop's gonna be like, all right, well, I'm gonna get this guy out here right away. So the cop's gonna get the perp. If the cop ends up with the perp, he's gonna have that card out there immediately as quick as he can. But if the mob boss has the perp card in his hand, he's gonna try and hold it back as far as long as he can because he wants to avoid a connection.
Right. Now, how do you connect people? What do you think?
With crimes. Because, you know, Eddie Fingers committed this crime with Phil the Fish, okay? And we know that because we have that on record. And the cops know that because they investigated that crime in the past. And the mob knows that because they hired Eddie and Phil to actually do that crime.
So something that's good. And something the mob could do then is they could have maybe dirty cops. So when you play a cop card.
Mm-hmm. You can eliminate one of the cop's connections.
Yeah, like you play your cop card and like, yeah, actually, he's a dirty cop.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he messed up the evidence on purpose.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, oh man.
So what is the mob guy's goal other than to deflect you? He's got to have a goal too.
The mob guy's trying to make it impossible for you to make that connection.
So if you never make the connection,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, it feels like the mob guy should have his own network that he's drawing to, right? On his side.
Okay. So the mob guy would have, but you know, the cop wants to be able to look at.
Oh, here's an idea.
Okay.
Simple idea. The mob guy, he doesn't draw a perpetrator and a crime. He does. He also draws a perpetrator and a crime card, except for his hasn't been done yet. So he's trying to pull off this big heist before you get back to the perpetrator. In fact, maybe the perpetrator and the crime. No, you'd have to have two. What you could do is you could have one perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
And that perpetrator, I branch out. If I'm the mob, I branch up. and one way from it. And if you're the police officer, you branch out the, like, okay, so the board would be set up. There's a perpetrator on the left.
Okay.
And then there's a crime card on top, which is the mob's crime card. And then below that, there's a crime card, not like under it, but, you know, below on the table.
Yeah.
There's a crime card that's already been committed, right?
Okay.
So as the police officer, I'm working from my crime card back to the perpetrator. But as the mob, you're working from the perpetrator to your crime card. So if you, if I arrest that perpetrator before you can pull off the crime you're trying to get to.
Oh, okay.
That's a game, man.
That's a game. Okay. Alternate approach.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Rather than, maybe you have conflicting goals. Okay. The cop is trying to make a connection from the crime to that perp. All right. Uh-huh. But the mob boss is trying to pull off as many jobs with his crew as he can to get as much money as possible. So the cop has to make that connection before the mob boss can make $1 million by putting out these crimes. So every time the mob boss puts out another crime, he's going to make money off it, but it's going to be another connection for the cop.
Right. And since he doesn't know what the cop has.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Those are two very valid play styles. Yeah. I mean, no, that's a game worth looking into.
I think so.
That's a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah.
Man, I love when one of us comes up with a mechanic and it's like, it just kind of clicks.
Right. So. I don't know if that's network building or route building in the way that the idea is intended, but I think it's still a valid approach to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
I like that a lot, man. I think that's worth looking into.
I mean, another variant, too, would be you could have multiple goals out there,
mm-hmm.
and then make it more true network building, as in, like, you're trying to reach each of those goals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's, mm-hmm. so there's a thought, too.
Yeah.
Kind of set up an array,
mm-hmm.
with the perpetrator in the middle, maybe.
Maybe it would have to be that the perp is the other player, then, you know, rather than having some random perp. It would have to be the cop is trying to connect this crime back to hit the other player.
To the boss. Well, why not to the boss. The mob boss, right?
To the mob boss, right.
And maybe you're the police chief, right?
And you're the police chief.
And you're fighting back and forth with your resources.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds awesome.
I think that could be really cool.
Listeners, give us some feedback on that.
Yeah, let us know what you think. Or if you have any other ideas or suggestions or anything like that. Have you heard of anything that's similar to that?
You know,
this is the kind of stuff we want to know from you guys. Let us know, because I that sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun game to me.
Yeah, so. And I, you know, you'd have a simple deck. You'd have crimes. You'd have characters. You'd have other, you know, effect cards or attack or defense cards, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So all in one simple deck. Everybody's playing from the same deck. I think that could be really cool.
I agree.
Yeah. Cops and robbers.
Let's not call it that.
Dance. It's a game.
Copyright.
Moving on, we should get to practicing the pitch here.
I feel like I just pitched it.
Well, we pitched one together, yeah. Oh, okay, we can end the show early then. No, plugs, what do you got to plug tonight?
No, so I do have a game to pitch.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
Oh, look at me, I brought a game. Right. I came prepared.
Tell us about it, sir.
So you and I had pitched some ideas together before. We were talking about a different mechanic.
Yeah.
And that made me come up with a game idea. To be transparent, we've talked about this game a lot.
We sure did. We brainstormed via email.
Yeah. And we realized that we love this game idea because it's so expandable.
Yeah, really versatile.
And we're going to talk about that. But first, I'm just going to kind of pitch the basic game.
Do it.
And then we're going to tell you why we love it so much.
Do it up.
Okay. So, setting is either on a spaceship or on like a little space station. You play a person on that space station. Now, there's up to four players. Mm-hmm. The way we talked about it could actually be 1 to 4 players.
Yeah.
Now, the goal is this. The space station is currently being attacked by aliens. The aliens are trying to break through the hull or the outer walls to get in to eat your face. Now, your job is to get off that spaceship before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the catch. There's one escape pod left that's going to fit one person. So only one of the players is going to get off the spaceship before it crumbles. So, to do that, you start in your respective areas. Now, the board is kind of set up like a maze. I mean, you know what's happening, but everything's very intertwining. There's a bunch of airlocks and hallways and different kinds of doors.
Yeah.
In different layers. The outer hull is broken down into several layers, which becomes important in a minute here.
Yeah.
So your goal is to work through those intertwining airlocks to get to the escape pod first. Here's the catch. You're going to be dealt, we'll say, 5 cards at the beginning. Those 5 cards are going to have access codes on them. Not really. It'll say, like, red airlocks or green airlocks.
Yeah. No, it's going to have a 27-digit code that will need to be entered into an electronic keypad that comes with the game.
But you have to memorize it.
Right.
At the beginning of the game.
You have to enter it simultaneously with your other player, and it has to be entered within an 8.7 second...
milliseconds.
Right, milliseconds. Excuse me, milliseconds.
Wow. So the idea is you've got your five access cards, and that's going to tell you what doors you're allowed to open. The catch is the game will be set up in a way so that most of the time, you're not going to have a way to get to that by yourself.
Yeah.
Which means your person who you're trying to let die, you have to work with them to get through airlocks. The way that would work is everyone has a comm system, right? So you don't need to be near each other.
Mm-hmm.
But like they would need to be by a red airlock, as you would. And you're like, you let me through this red airlock, and I'm going to let you through the blue airlock.
Right. So a lot of working with each other, yes. You know, negotiating. Come on, man, help me out. We got to help each other right here. Yeah.
Now, in addition to those cards, you would also mix in with those cards, you would have some special codes that would let you into a place where they store spacesuits, for instance, right?
Yep.
Or a place where they store extra weapons and body armor and stuff like that, and various other supplies, maybe health supplies and stuff.
Sure.
Every character is armed. Every character does have a gun to start with.
Okay.
Probably a laser pistol.
Lasers with a Z, right?
Just like that. Lasers with two Z's. One in the middle, one on the end.
Ah,
lasers. So, sorry. Sorry, listeners. I apologize.
You better.
For our idiocy. However, what I was going to say was, so the aliens. Let's get back to the aliens, right? Bunch of face huggers, right?
Jerks.
And what they're going to be doing, the aliens are automated, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
So the aliens, they start in the outside hall. And we're gonna say there's 10 entrances. And each one of those entrances has a value. 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 5 to 7. And then maybe we'll skip 8 and we'll go 9 to 10. And then maybe we'll skip 11 and we'll go 12 to 13. And so the point is, your alien is gonna roll a d20. And mm-hmm. each side of the ship would be different. You're going to start with 4 aliens trying to break in, I think is probably a good start.
Okay.
You're going to roll the d20, and that's going to apply to all 4 aliens. But since all the sides are different, what's going to happen is, so you got 11 to 12. I mean, you got a 12 to 13 hole. So you got a 12, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to bust through the 12 to 13 hole. So you would put a little marker on that says that's open now. And they're going to go into the next place, which has another line of numbers. So, and if an alien roll, if one of the numbers you roll doesn't allow them, you know, it's not like 8 that I mentioned wasn't there. So 8's not there, they don't get through that turn.
Yeah.
The catch is once they do get through the hull, and there's 3 layers, once, as soon as one breaks through, now the hallway that it's connected to is depressurized, or yeah, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So you can't walk through that hallway unless you had a spacesuit. Hey, that's where spacesuits come in. So... also, I think it would be cool that you have to work with other people, but maybe you could spend your entire turn instead attacking a door, and uh-huh. you could blow up an airlock.
Oh.
But now it's wide open.
Yeah.
So that means if that hallway becomes depressurized and you're farther down the line,
mm-hmm.
that airlock's gone. So as the aliens are doing that, the ship is going to become harder and harder to navigate through. Very easily, a player could become trapped and lose just because of that.
Yeah,
because
they're cut off from everything right. else.
Now, however, that's when you could get negotiations like, all right, I can't move. Hey, there's a spacesuit thing next to me. Well, hey, if you let me open the red airlock, I'll let you open the spacesuit thing with a code I have, and then you can walk through there.
Yeah.
Once the aliens are inside, they move towards the closest person, and they attack. So that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They always move to the closest person, and they always attack. Again, then they're automated. There would be a cool attack and defense system, I think, where we talked about where somebody could get wounded. Like, so you roll a die or do something to attack, and that would hit a certain area. So if it hits their leg, now they move slower. And I kind of picture it based on an action point system. So it's not like a roll and move. I mean, the action points, say you get 6 action points.
Yeah.
And it costs, you know, every two, so many squares you want to move. We'll say every 2 squares is 1 point. Attacking someone is 1 point. So, you know, you kind of stack those up.
Yeah.
Maybe if you want to blow up an airlock, that's all 6 of your points that turn.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get shot in the leg, now it costs 1 for 1 to move. You got shot in the arm, now it costs 2 to attack.
Mm-hmm.
And you would track that on your little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So here's what Rom and I think is super cool about right. this game. Scenarios. You can have pretty much infinite scenarios with this.
Yeah.
Which could be on the same board, or even cooler, you would have the ability to have separate maps, like a double-sided board with a map on each side.
Right.
Or expansion maps that you can just print and play.
Yeah, right. And let's see, that's what I think is really cool, that, you know, your main map, your main four-player board is a space station. It's kind of circular, you know, for easy to have four people going at it from four different points, starting points. But let's say you have a two-player map, and that's just a spaceship, you know, and it's kind of a linear spaceship. And so everybody starts starts up in the cockpit, and you got to make your way to the other end of the ship where the escape pod is, out by the, you know, by the rear, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Could have different kinds of maps for different scenarios. You could have multiple scenarios on the same map.
Oh yeah. You could have scenarios where two people win.
Yeah.
It's a four player game and two people escape on this. So now you've got people working in teams, right? Because, right. Hey, Rob, you and I, our wives are also playing, but hey, if we work together, we can get to the escape pod. Screw them, you know?
Right.
So
you could have a scenario where you start out and let's say you start with this, you just succeeded at killing all the aliens who were just invading your ship. But now you have a certain number of turns to get through and repair all the stuff they broke,
yep.
Repair the sections of the hull, you know? And so your attack mechanic, whatever you do for attacking, then is repurposed for doing repairs, and success, right. And failure when doing repairs. And you need to do that within a certain time before your ship explodes.
Right.
You know?
And the one thing to be clear about that I was thinking people might ask about is, so I've got my five cards that I got dealt, right? With all my special things I can get access to.
Mm-hmm.
If I kill you, I don't get your cards.
No,
they're not actually cards. It's information that you have as a character.
Yeah, sure.
So, and once somebody gives you that information, I don't picture that you have it forever. Like, if I let you through a red door,
mm-hmm.
It's not like you know how to get in the red door now. It's like I put in the code to open the red door.
Sure.
Sure. For you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's obviously there's a lot to be worked out with mechanics and specifics and balancing
loads.
And tons of that kind of stuff. But I think that basic idea is really exciting.
And what it allows, too, is you could easily have a solo game. Because since the aliens play themselves,
right.
Obviously the mechanics would have to be worked out for the solo game,
right.
Because of the extra cards.
Right.
Like maybe you get dealt five cards, and then maybe there are cards positioned throughout the base.
Something like that.
And you have to get to them to try mm-hmm. and...
Sure.
Or maybe you just have to go Master Blast or mm-hmm. blowing up all the airlocks, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, but that's the kind of thing that can be given to you in a scenario setup.
Exactly.
Right. And so the cool thing about that then is that can kind of put some kind of a narrative into the game.
Right.
Which is exciting, too.
In a game like this for a Kickstarter...
Uh-huh.
I mean, one of the easiest ever and coolest stretch goals you can consistently have is
mm-hmm.
do this. We're going to throw in another scenario.
Yeah.
You know, scenario, I mean,
additional maps even.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, so.
Yeah. Plus, you know, it'd be easy to make print and play extra maps and print and play extra scenarios.
Right.
You know, that either free downloads or cheap downloads or, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, you'd have the cost of artwork for that new map. But, you know, apart from that, and I guess layout costs for setting up the scenario. But the potential there for expandability and versatility. I mean, you know, you can also give people kind of a generic layout or to make their own scenarios, set their own things up. If you scale this properly and you make it their kind of size, I mean, the all the components can be used in other role-playing games and things. I mean,
yep.
It's a really, really versatile way of approaching this kind of stuff.
Oh, definitely.
Which I think is a really cool idea.
And something else you could do that I think is really cool is if you release a thing of components,
mm-hmm.
like print and play components and a blank map,
mm-hmm.
people could make their own map.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, right. I know that's a big thing for some video game communities where they have map editors and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
people can make their own maps and publish right. them out there for people right. to print for free. And I mean,
yeah.
there is like the possibilities are limitless with this game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like. You basically create a pretty simple base structure with, you know, some clear cut rules that allow you to do things like action points, I think, are a great way to go because mm-hmm. action points drive everything. And if you want to have a scenario, it can say, hey, also, you can spend one action point to do this. Like, for instance, the repairing thing.
Yeah.
Use right. repairing like you're doing your attack mechanic.
Right.
And, you know, actually repairing, that could be something in the main game, too, where maybe one of the access codes you get gets you to a set of repair tools.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So, sure, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. Yeah.
It's the kind of game where you're not going to just sit down and play this casually with a few people. It's kind of an appointment game, you know?
Right.
You know, it's going to be one of those bigger sets where you say, hey, everybody, come over. We're going to play whatever we call this game, you know?
Right.
We're going to come over tonight. We're going to play this scenario for this game, and let's see how we do, you know?
Right.
So it would be simpler than and probably more condensed than like a one-shot role-playing game. because it's still a board game, you know?
Right.
But it's more in the vein of those D&D board games, I guess, is what I'm saying. Right. You know?
When you could easily do co-op scenarios where you're all four working together.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know? Another way to expand the game possibly would be to do separate characters.
Sure.
To where each person's little little character guy or, you know, they were different. You know, maybe one's a mechanic and one's a fighter. And, you know, I mean, you could really, I mean, again, limitless possibilities.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of components to the game.
So if you can't tell, we're excited about
it. I think it's cool. I think it's
a neat
idea. A lot of work to do on it, of course.
Right.
But
no, this is something I think together we'll probably talk more about because it's, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's super duper fun. And
yeah.
Yeah. And I think very Kickstarterable. That's
oh yeah, yeah, I think so. It is now in this age,
modern day vernacular.
Right. So, it's gonna be in Webster's in the next edition.
Probably.
I don't know. Is Webster's even the main dictionary these days?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
So
yeah.
So yeah, that's my pitch.
I think it's cool. I think it's a great idea, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do with it.
Thank you.
I will play the crap out of that.
Hey, we do a couple questions here. Well, I think we have one question, actually.
I think we have one more left? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we have one question.
Well, one more tonight, I mean, yeah.
One more tonight, yeah. So the we're only going to take one more question, and this is it. Sorry, everyone else, you're hosed. The question was, it's from AJ from Van Ryder Games, and he wanted to know what we think about playing multiple characters within one game.
Ooh, multiple characters in one game. I think that could be really cool.
I think that could work for this game.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
right. I mean, because you could be controlling multiple people trying to do multiple things at the same time.
Yeah.
You
know, that makes me think of like old video games. I don't know if you ever played Lost Vikings or Goblins.
Yep. Or that there's that newer one that. Try something.
Trine. Oh yeah, Trine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something that's been done really well in terms of puzzle game kind of ideas in video games.
Right.
Yeah. So in terms of a tabletop game, like we mentioned those D&D board games that are out there. I mean, those are designed to be played with a group of people, but. In theory, you could play them all as one. In Sentinels of the Multiverse, you can play it two-player if each person plays two characters at a time. That works just fine.
Yep, and you can play as one player and do four. I mean,
there's
a lot of options with that. No, I think, I agree. I think it's a really good mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the game ideas I pitched have actually had that in it.
Yeah.
That first, the zombie game I pitched the first time, you know, the idea was you were building a survivor group
of
multiple characters.
Right. In Ramblers, I mean, you've got multiple Ramblers, and I guess you're not going to be playing multiple
at the same time,
but you've got
you are continuously cycling through them
through multiple characters through the game.
No, I think that's a good question, and I think it's a good mechanic. I mean, you know, I've always been a fan of different characters playing different characters in a game, so the idea of playing multiples I think is cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as with all things, getting it balanced and getting it put together properly is key. But I think that could be a lot of fun,
and that kind of brings in the role selection mechanic in a different way.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So that we talked about before,
right? A couple weeks ago, yeah.
So yeah.
Interesting.
That's the question we had this week.
Okay.
So we just have plugs left?
We sure do. And I have nothing to plug this week. I mean, Tokyo Jungle,
so
I obviously
pretty
plugged.
Pretty much plugged that.
Right, because I am in love with that game. I'm just bonkers about it. But yeah, what else, what do you got?
There's a Kickstarter going right now for a game called Castle Dice.
Castle Dice.
And I'll tell you, I watched the video, and the video is kind of silly and fun, but the game looks really cool. It's dice drafting. So you're trying to build your castle. Mm-hmm. You got your little tableau in front of you. And everybody rolls a bunch of dice, and then you draft from that pile of dice. Like, I'm going to take a pig. I'm going to take a sheep. I'm going to take some brick. I'm going to take a barbarian, right? So, like, you're kind of doing that. And that looks really cool to me. The one downfall to the game is base game, $65 on Kickstarter.
Oh, dice are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why there's not a lot of dice building style games. I mean, do you remember how much Quarriors was?
I think
was
that was $50.
So,
yeah.
And I'm guessing this might be priced a little bit higher for Kickstarter because of shipping. Because a game with a ton of dice ain't cheap to ship easier.
Well, plus they're probably a smaller company because Quarriors was WizKids.
So they can afford to price it for $50.
Make a lot of those.
But what bums me out is, I mean, I still might back it.
Yeah.
They have some time to go. I think they have several. So they still have a week or two to go.
Yeah.
And at the point I'm talking about this, and they're about half funded.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they'll make it because it's a really cool game.
Mm-hmm.
$65 is a little high, but again, for that game, totally understand the price, mm-hmm. and I may back it. If I don't, I'll be sad.
Okay. Right on.
I love dice.
And that Kickstarter will still be going on when this episode posts?
Yeah, because now it has more than a week or two left. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was saying that for the benefit of the listeners.
Okay. All right. Cool.
So.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking earlier today about all the Kickstarter stuff that I backed that I'm hoping to get soon. Like, I just got the Sentinels Infernal Relics expansion just a couple weeks ago. I've got that Barons of Tea game that should be shipping, I think, in the next few weeks.
Yep, and I'm waiting for Garden Dice. That Garden should be coming soon.
Right. Jungle Ascent just funded.
So that'll be a while.
That'll be a little while. I backed that Quicksilver Zeppelin racing game.
I can't wait to try that.
I'm really excited about it. I like racing games.
Then I bet Great Heartland, there's that.
Yeah, that's coming soon. I guess that's probably all that I've backed recently that I'm expecting soon anyway.
But it's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. It's very cool. Also big congratulations to Ben Rossett. Mars Needs Mechanics was funded successfully. Had a nice big push there at the end. They got some good bonus stuff.
Yeah.
Out. So
they just slayed their bonuses, man.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations to Ben. Well done. And yeah.
You deserve it, man. You're a good guy mm-hmm. with a great game. So yeah.
I guess that wraps us up here.
Yep. Final reminder. Contest.
Don't forget. I think this is the last show that's going to throw up. Yeah.
Next time, we may or may not announce a winner next time. We probably won't, is my guess.
Right.
There'll probably be a time after that or so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So just a reminder, you want to send us an email pitching yourself as a game designer, as an unpublished game designer.
Yep.
Why you should come on our show and get to pitch your game, just like we pitch our games every week. Mm-hmm. And like our friend Will did a couple episodes ago.
Yep.
So, yeah, you want to send that email to btgcontest@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's our special email for the contest. And I encourage everyone to do that if you're unpublished and you have an idea. Do. Because we just love hearing ideas and we love hearing from people. So,
yeah.
I think that's all I got.
Okay, yeah. So, if you want to get in touch with us for any other reason, you can find us on Twitter @podcastBTG. My Twitter is @poorly_designed. Jason is @JASlingerland. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Anything else?
I think you hit it all.
Okie doke. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game,
Wild Harem Custom Made Harem Pants.